This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
Lot to do today, guys. Week two of the NFL season starts tonight. The Browns and the Bengals. Yankees win yet again. Mets gave you a panic attack, not because they were losing or won or any of those things, because you thought DeGrom might really be injured, so that was very concerning. But I think the jumping off point today for us, and I can't believe we're here, that he needs a vote of confidence after week one, but that's where we are, Chris. And before I do that, by the way, I'd be remiss to not go around the horn and have pleasantries. So good morning, Chris Canty. How are you?
I'm doing well, Dave. Good morning to you and to Rick DiPietro. I'm sitting here looking at the lines for week two, and I wanted to ask Rico if I was out of pocket for looking at the Jets line at plus seven as one of my best bets and taking the San Francisco 49ers.
See, that's just disrespectful. I mean, now you're just trolling.
Who is it disrespectful to?
Well, to me, I mean, you guys are supposed to be pumping me up this week. After what happened in week one against Buffalo, you're supposed to be pumping me up a little bit. You're supposed to make me feel
we'll
good.
We'll leave the pumping up to Chris Johnson. How about that?
Yeah, I'm going to need you guys to do the opposite.
He does it so well with Adam Gase.
I'm going to need you guys to do the opposite of what Chris Johnson did with
Why?
Adam Gase.
He tells you how promising things are. You got an offensive genius running things.
Well, the U.S. Open is currently on television, and then I got Woods, friend of the show, Colin Morikawa, and Justin Thomas, both, you know, all three playing right now in the same group. So I need you to lower your expectations on my contribution today. Just lower them now. Get that out of the way.
Okay.
Because I'm dialed into Wingfoot right now. Makes me actually miss doing the show at Wingfoot.
I guess from a sporting standpoint, that's all you got to look forward to, right?
And he's got the Islanders game six tonight.
Yeah, that's true. I forgot about that. Well, I'm a Rangers fan, Dave, so I'll just kind of block that out. That doesn't exist in my world. That's not in my purview.
I like it.
You know what I'm saying?
I love the way you think
exactly.
But come on, stop with the negativity. You got the Islanders game six tonight. Can you at least wait till they're done before you pile it all on?
What am I piling on? I'm just telling you right now. I'm locked into the golf. You and Chris are, listen, two of the best in the business. I'm just telling you right now, do the opposite of what Chris Johnson did. I'm not going to be brilliant today. I'm just letting you know that now because I got important things going on today. This is a big day of sports for me, Dave.
This is a big day of sports. We got football. We got baseball. We got basketball. You have a huge hockey game. You got golf. I mean, let's be honest. It doesn't get much bigger than this, right? We are all in on sports right now.
Yeah, I don't know how it does. I mean, honestly, I mean, this is the first round of the U.S. Open in golf. I got game six of the Eastern Conference Finals of hockey. I got game two of the Eastern Conference Finals in the NBA. We got baseball.
Yep.
I mean, this
you got Yankees who are rolling.
And I got
you
the first Thursday night football game tonight. It's a must win for Cleveland. Let's be honest. The Cleveland Browns have to win this game tonight.
Yes. If the Browns lose this game tonight, not that it affects us greatly, but you're going to hear panic, and rightfully so, I think, out of Cleveland.
There's something that stinks in Cleveland, though. I'm going to be honest with you. After watching
Odell's
that first
bedroom.
Game, it's not a talent issue. I honestly don't think it's a talent issue. I mean, even with Baker Mayfield, man, we're laughing about him. But when he came in that third game of the season, his rookie year, he lit the world on fire. Like, the kid looked good. There's a reason why we put him up here on this pedestal, because we thought that this was the Cleveland Browns finally figuring out their quarterback problem. But it's been all downhill since then. I don't know, man. It's something going on there, and they clearly don't have it fixed. If they lose to the Bengals tonight, like, everybody in Cleveland will be in full panic mode.
Yeah, if you lose at home to, not that home matters all that much now, but if you lose at home to Cincinnati, a team that the expectations are going to be lousy, and your expectations are decent, right? Most people think Cleveland's around a 500 team. If you lose at home to Cincinnati, I mean, you could see the season completely spiraling out of control after 2 weeks.
Well, then it ain't about the coaches, Dave. I mean, this is Baker Mayfield's third coach. At that point, it becomes about the player, right? You can't blame Hugh Jackson. You can't blame Freddie Kitchens. And you can't blame Kevin Stefanski. Maybe Baker Mayfield just isn't that good. Now, I find that hard to believe just because I actually saw it at the NFL level. But, I mean, there's something going on culture-wise, and they haven't gotten it fixed. Similar to what we're talking about with the Jets. There's something going on culture-wise over at Florham Park, and it hadn't gotten fixed. And the guy that Chris Johnson tabbed to get the job done, and Adam Gase, yeah, that wasn't the right direction to go.
Well, how about to make matters worse? And by the way, I know you want to check out today, but you do have a CMT coming up in the 10 o'clock hour. So if you could at least, you know, give us that later on.
Well, that's done. I knew it was going to happen today, so I already did that yesterday. That's done.
All right, good. So it's troubling on so many levels, Rick, because the fact that you have to come out and have kind of a, I have complete confidence in this guy after 1 week. We're 1 week in, and already the owner of your team has to come out and make a statement of, you know, I completely believe, I have full confidence in Adam Gase. And an offensive genius. I mean, we've watched this guy for now more than a year. He looks like he doesn't know much about offense at all. And I'm not saying he doesn't, but it doesn't look good. And to come out and defend like that, Rick, I don't know, man. If I'm a Jets fan, I am beside myself today.
It feels kind of Knicks-y, doesn't it, with Fizdale? It feels a little bit Knicks-y.
Yeah, very much so.
Knee-jerk reaction to, you know, the fan base and, you know, sports talk radio and everything just crushing them after week one. And it was non-competitive. He should be embarrassed. I mean, Chris Johnson should be embarrassed. He really should. I was actually hoping Canty, talking about Cleveland, would say maybe Baker Mayfield and Cleveland could use Adam Gase down there to help them out. Do us a favor. Maybe we'll trade you Gase for Odell Beckham. How about that? Does that work for them? I was listening to Get Up. I think Santy pulled the sound. I hope he has it. But you don't even have to have an opinion. Like, you can take your opinion of Adam Gase completely out of the conversation and just, I mean, Greeny went through the facts. And, I mean, I was almost like, I knew it was bad, and we've gone through some of the stuff, but they dug deep, man. And it made me a little bit sick to my stomach.
It should.
That Sam Darnold, the future of this franchise, what we thought was the future of this franchise, is, you know, this is what he has to deal with, because it's bad.
It should make you sick to your stomach.
Well, we said it when they made the hire, though. We're like, why are you entrusting Adam Gase with the most critical phase of Sam Darnold's career? I mean, the developmental phase for a quarterback, you're talking about the first three or four seasons, you have to make sure that you have somebody that knows what the hell they're doing. And clearly Adam Gase didn't. Not only from, you know, being a quarterback whisperer and trying to make sure that Sam's trajectory is pointed in the right direction, but making sure the overall team around him is going in the right direction. Like, making sure that the infrastructure surrounding your quarterback is such that you're going to be able to get him to realize his potential, and that clearly isn't the case. But we didn't think that Adam Gase was capable of doing that just based off what we saw of him down in Miami. Let's face it, the best year that he had with the Dolphins was the first year where he had the least amount of influence in terms of what the overall roster looked like. And then they decided they were going to make him the czar, and he was going to be control of not only coaching the team but personnel, and that was just a disaster. And they had to get rid of him, and they had to turn it over to Chris Greer to get things going in the right direction. But for me, Adam Gase was never the guy that you would look at and say, this is the guy that I want to build the foundation to develop my young quarterback. He's never been that guy. If you want to get him a veteran quarterback like a Peyton Manning, like a Jay Cutler, okay, cool, that works. We've seen him have success like that as an offensive coordinator. But as a head coach, developing young quarterbacks, come on, man. Let's start with the shenanigans. He's not that dude.
And do you remember?
Which is why it's so baffling that Chris Johnson would have chosen him. And that's a few weeks after the guy got fired from the Dolphins. It's absolutely ridiculous. And to come out and give him a vote of confidence after the first game of the season. You know what that is, guys. It's not just them hearing the noise from, you know, sports talk and from the fan base. There are people inside of that building in the organization that probably aren't sold on Adam Gase either. And this is the owner trying to do everything that he can to keep it all together. But it's already falling apart. We've seen it. We saw it up in Buffalo. It's a wrap.
Yeah, but I told you that last year. It wasn't just the players. I mean, it was the coaching staff, too, that had questions about Adam Gase. In that week one performance, he did himself no favors at all. At all.
Awful. Yeah, but here's the thing. A vote of confidence? Like, it's one thing to make a mistake.
It's his first hire as the owner of the team.
It doesn't matter. What do we talk about all the time? If you're running a company, you're the CEO of anything, when you make a mistake, you're going to compound it, or you're going to admit, you know what, I made a mistake and maybe move on. And I'm not saying he has to move on now, but to come out and double down, and you remember what Dan Graziano said to us yesterday? He said, Douglas and Gase are tied at the hip. So this idea that they're going to just move on from Adam Gase and keep Joe Douglas, he's not even sure that's the case right now.
Yeah, but, I mean, the initial mistake was letting someone that's never made a decision like this hire your head coach. That was the first mistake. So what is he going to do now? In his first decision, you know, after finally getting control of the team from Woody, his first decision, he's just going to, after 17 games, just admit his ineptitude? You'd like to believe that was the case?
No, I don't think you have to admit your ineptitude, but I think you could come out and say something like, you know what, our expectations are that we're going to be better than that, and that's not acceptable, and Jets fans and the Jets organization is not going to stand for that. Instead of, he's an offensive genius and I have nothing but confidence in him.
Yeah, but how would Chris Johnson know otherwise? That was the reason why he hired him. He fell in love with him. Whatever Adam Gase sold him, he fell in love with. And maybe it's just me, or us on the show, I have a different definition of brilliance and guru. Usually when someone's a guru in something, like you actually see tangible results. Like when the Islanders hired Lou, who's one of the best to ever do it, and Barry Trotz, who's great at what he does, you saw instant results. The Islanders went from the worst defensive team, not same players, worst defensive team in the league, to the best defensive team in the league. That's what gurus, people that are brilliant, do when put in situations. Like all those guys that they take off the scrap heap from other teams in the AFC East, and you put them on New England, and all of a sudden they can play?
Yes.
That didn't magically just happen. It's because you got a great head coach. There has been nothing but regression since he took over. I'm telling you, listen to Santi, do you have that sound of Greeny?
Yeah, he has it. All right, here's Greeny this morning. Here it is, Greeny this morning from Get Up. Here we go.
So the acting owner of the Jets thinks Adam Gase has a brilliant offensive mind. To that, I reply, what on earth could possibly have given you that impression? There is certainly no evidence that it's true. What there is, in fact, is overwhelming evidence that the exact opposite is true. Consider that in no season that Peyton Manning was not his quarterback did any of Gase's teams ever finish in the top half of the league in scoring. The last three seasons, in fact, they finished 28th, 26th, and 31st. That's in a 32-team league. In 17 games under Gase, the Jets have scored 33 touchdowns, and they've punted 93 times. They have scored on 24% of their possessions. That's the worst in the league. They've gone three and out on 44%. That's the worst in the league. Their average drive has gained 23 yards. All of those are the worst in the NFL. But wait, there's more. When the Jets acquired Le'Veon Bell, he had averaged more total yards per game than any player in history ever. Under the brilliant offensive mind, Bell is 27th in the league in yards per game. And there's one more, just so you know, this is not just my fandom talking. Under Gase in Miami, Ryan Tannehill was so bad, the Dolphins traded him for mid-round draft picks, and they chipped in $5 million just to get rid of him. Then, in his first year in Tennessee away from Gase, Tannehill had the fourth highest passer rating in history and led the Titans to the AFC title game. Those are all facts. They happened. And they beg one big question, Christopher Johnson. If the coach has a brilliant offensive mind, what in the world is he doing with it?
And that, of course, is Greeny, who's so funny with his statements. You can hear him 1 to 2 here on 98.7 every weekday. But it's a fair point. I mean, at what point do we get to see, Rick? At what point do we get to see this brilliant offensive mind? Because as you've heard, how many times did Greeny say, last in the NFL? And that's worse in the NFL. That's last in the NFL. That's worse in the NFL. I mean, brilliant offensive mind. We've had 17 games into this, and I'm yet to see this brilliant offensive mind.
Dave, I mean, that's not opinion. What Greeny, I mean, he's a huge Jets fan. Nothing he said was opinion-based. That was all factual information. That was the great research department that GetUp has digging deep and coming up with all those numbers. The fact that they punt on 44% of their offensive possessions, no, they go three and out in 44% of their offensive possessions, that doesn't scream brilliance to me. It doesn't. And I don't care what the quarterback situation was last year and everything else. I mean, we had people calling. You want to talk about offensive gurus and guys that, you know, can get the best out of the talent that they have? Let's go back to, and I love this guy. I think we all can agree. Kyle Shanahan's one of the best in the business.
One of the best.
Yep.
When Jimmy G got hurt and Nick Mullins took over, you had CJ Beathard, and then he got hurt, and then Nick Mullins. Chris Canty, remind me, did we take phone calls from people? Because Nick Mullins looked so good, did we take phone calls saying that they should try to trade for Nick Mullins?
Yep. Don't you remember the Giants should try to go get him?
We absolutely did.
Was it?
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
We absolutely did. Yeah.
We took those phone calls.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Because that's
if Adam Gase is an offensive genius, what is Kyle Shanahan? What is Andy Reid? What are the actual offensive geniuses in this league if Adam Gase is considered an offensive genius?
I mean, is that a legitimate question?
Because I don't understand.
Serious with that.
And it would bother me to no end if I was a Jets fan. If I've watched 17 games of this, it almost looks like it couldn't be worse than it is. And the owner comes out with a vote of confidence of, you guys just don't see what I see. He's an offensive genius. Well, he looks like he doesn't know what he's doing out there.
No, those guys are Einstein.
But hold on, Dave. Rewind that. You said you guys don't see what I see. I guess my question to Chris Johnson is, what is it that you see, and why should we validate your opinion? I mean, it's clear you don't know what the hell you're looking at. I mean, you felt uncomfortable going through the coaching search unless you had a general manager, Mike McCagnan, who you were going to move on from several weeks after you made the hire. So let's admit that you don't know what you're doing. I think that's the first part of this that we gotta nail down before this Jets program can move forward. Chris Johnson doesn't know what he's doing. He needs to hire people that do and empower them. And if Joe Douglas is going to be your general manager moving forward, then go ahead and give him the autonomy to make the best football decision, which would be, at some point this year, moving off of Adam Gase as your head coach and starting the coaching search process. Like, to me, that has to be what it is.
But how are you going to do that now when you just came out and doubled down on how great this guy actually is?
Well, Dave, didn't we see it a couple of years ago with Ben McAdoo when the Giants ownership came out and said, we're not going to fire the coach in the middle of the season, and then they fired the coach in the middle of the season? Like, yeah. That happened. So, I mean, this is just – I mean, that's just talk. He's just putting that out there to try to you know, put out some of the fires that are going on after that debacle that happened in Buffalo. But in looking at this situation right now, Adam Gase is not the right guy for this job. And all you needed to see was what happened in Buffalo on Sunday. All the talk we got this offseason was, okay, what we saw in the second half of 2019 was more of what the Jets were going to be in 2020 and moving forward. They were going to carry that momentum from the second half of last year into the beginning of this season. And guess what? You got stopped cold by the Bills. There was no momentum. They look disorganized. They look unprepared. That was a team that wasn't ready to play. And that's on the head coach. You can talk about all the talent issues that the Jets have, and they do need to improve the talent level. That's a real thing. But in terms of the penalties, the miscues, the blown coverages, like all of those things fall on the head coach. That's his responsibility. That's what we're seeing. So when Chris Johnson says, I wish you guys could see what I see, it doesn't matter what you see at practice. It matters what the players take to the game. And what I saw was an undisciplined, unprepared football team. There's no way he can excuse that.
No, he can't. But again, it's his first decision. And let's face it. If someone doesn't really know what they're looking at, period, because they're not qualified to do it, and they, you know, now all of a sudden Adam Gase becomes his football guy. So anything Adam Gase tells him, he believes. I mean, that's what
Adam Gase is a hell of a salesman, man. He really is. Like, when he gets fired from the Jets, the NFL should hire him and allow him to do a seminar on how to get a head coaching job for all of the candidates out there. I'm serious. I don't know what he told Chris Johnson in that meeting, but, like, whatever he said to get a job after a couple of weeks of being on the street after you got fired, like, that's impressive.
What would have to happen for Chris Johnson to look at Adam Gase and say, you know what, it's just not working out. Like if what we've seen so far is, well, he's an offensive genius, what would actually have to happen for him to look at things and say, no, this is not exactly what I'm looking for? To have negative yards in a game? To punt it on third down all the time? Like, what would have to happen?
I think they had a game last year. I think there was the game up in New England where they had 133 total yards of offense. I don't know how you can prepare for six days for an NFL game and have 133 yards of offense. I don't care if it's the backup quarterback. He's still an NFL player. 133 yards of offense from your offensive guru? Come on, man.
Like, yeah,
you got to look at it for what it is. Adam Gase is not good at his job. He's not. And you got to hold him accountable as such. 17 games is enough of a sample size from Adam Gase coming off of the 3 years of Miami to realize that he ain't your guy.
Yeah, but let's not pretend like we haven't seen decisions like this made before. I mean, you're sitting here trying to, like, go, what could Chris Johnson see? I mean, what did Jeff and Fred see in Brody Van Wagenen to make them believe that he was going to be good at the job? Nothing.
Well, how's that worked out?
It hasn't.
Right. We're
comparing it to the Mets.
Yeah, but that's, I mean, to figure out where we were going.
No, but that it happens. I'm not saying it should happen. I've seen it. I've witnessed it happen. I lived it. I watched it happen. Charles bought the team. He was a basketball guy, not a hockey guy. And then Mike Milbury was the GM. He taught Charles hockey. So anything that Mike told him, because he didn't know, he would believe. Because that was his guy. That was the guy who was going to teach him about hockey. Like, if I all of a sudden bought an NBA team, I love basketball and I watch it. You could take the worst coach in the NBA, sit him in my office, and he starts going X's and O's, I'm probably going to end up buying into it. Because he's talking a different language than me. And if I like him, oh, I like this guy. I feel like I can trust this guy. You know, maybe I make the ridiculous decision to hire him. Was Chris Johnson equipped to make this kind of decision?
But even if you make the wrong decision, you're a bright enough guy that when the results are so apparently horrible that you might adjust your belief of what he is, no?
He's riding and dying with this decision.
Oh, my God.
It might be his last decision, Dave. Put it all into context, too. When Woody comes back, who do you think is going to be making the decisions?
I think Woody will make the decisions.
Oh, exactly right. So, I mean, what are you going to do? Just all of a sudden, 17 games in, say, you know what? Bad decision by me. Terrible decision. So my only decision was a horrendous decision. It's not in the best interest of the Jets, but not every owner makes decisions in the best interest of their team. A lot of them make what's in the best interest of them.
Well, I don't know how this is in the best interest of him.
He doesn't want to admit that he made a terrible decision. He looks like he... We already suspect he doesn't know what he's doing. This would just confirm to everyone he has no idea what he's doing.
But I think that's obvious by now. Like, I don't even think
I don't know what to say at this point.
Well, there isn't anything to say, Dave. We're just going to sit back and watch how bad it is. Because if you thought it was bad on Sunday against the Bills, what do you think it's going to look like this Sunday with the 49ers coming off of a loss?
They're a little banged up. Let's be positive. They're a little banged up.
Yeah, George Kittle may not play. Not going to practice.
Secondary.
Do they need George Kittle to beat the Jets?
Probably not.
They already let receivers one ride open in their secondary. I don't think they need George Kittle. Not for this game. But it's bad, and it's only going to get worse from here, because guess what? The players know when the owner has to come out and do something like that, it's show for the rest of the season.
It's awful. To be sitting here after week one and to be having this discussion is awful. Let's go to Ira in Staten Island. Ira, lead us off. You're on 98.7 ESPN.
Hey, good morning, Dave. Good morning, fellas. How are you? I tell you, all the years, I'm 66 years old, and all the sports and pretty much the last 45 years been football. I've never seen where an owner of a team after one game has to come out and make excuses. And, this goes all the way back to the poor decision that they made when they let Tannenbaum go, and they kept Rex, and they brought in Idzik. They put a coach with a general manager who didn't want him in the first place. And ever since then, since that move, this has been spiraling out of control. And you know what? They went so many routes. They went with Wolf, and they went with Cassidy. He brought in his buddies. That failed. Previous to that, I think when they brought in Idzik, that Kornhauser or whatever that business group they had to hire people, that didn't work out. And now it turns out, to me, it has the way the structure is set up in the organization. I know a lot of teams do this, but I think for the Jets, it just doesn't work. Where the coach and the general manager are on par and they report to the owner. It can't be that way. You need to hire a general manager. You hire Joe Douglas, he's your general manager. He needs to pick the coach. And unfortunately, this is the situation they are right now. It's definitely headed in the wrong direction. But just as a fan, I just can't believe after 1 week, I have to have the owner come out and make excuses. Just let this thing play out. And then guess what? At the bye week, if you're 1-7, you make your decision and you either move on or you finish out the year with them. But, you have Greg Williams sitting in the woods. If you have to make him the interim coach in the middle of the season, that's what you have to do. And then if you hire Joe Douglas, you gave him a 6-year contract, if you're going to move on from Gase, you let Douglas make the hire. And you change the way the organization is set up structurally. The GM is no.
They're not going to change it. Ira, there is no way they're going to change the way that they're set up structurally.
Well, if they don't change it, they will never have success that way. Because you see, it's been a 10-year run. It doesn't work.
Well, I don't think anyone can argue with you. I mean, listen, we've said this for how many years? We didn't like how the front office was set up.
It's ridiculous the way it's set up.
No, I don't disagree with you. And I mean, then them trying to, have these arranged marriages with coaches and GMs, I mean, it doesn't work. I mean, what should have happened was, and I get he was uncomfortable, but if there was any thought you were going to fire Mike Maccagnan, you didn't trust him, the first to go, I mean, they should have just cleaned house. McCagnan's gone, coach is gone. Find your new GM, because it should go owner, GM. If you want to have a president, I guess you can have a president. So owner, president, GM, and then coach.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it should work. But now all of a sudden you put yourself in a situation, and I don't know how close the relationship is. This is what kind of muddies the waters between Joe Douglas and Adam Gase. Like, does Joe Douglas feel like he owes Adam Gase for getting him this job? Like, I don't know how that dynamic works.
But if it continues to look the way it's looked on Sunday, there's no way that Joe Douglas can continue to stand by Adam Gase. Like, if it's as bad as it was against the Bills and it continues to be that throughout the course of the season, there is no way that Joe Douglas will retain Adam Gase as the head coach going into 2021.
No.
I don't care how
close the relationship is. You can't win two or three games and roll this thing back.
I don't care if he feels like he owes him the world. It's not going to happen.
Well, you lose credibility.
Like, they will move on from Adam Gase.
Like, Joe Douglas will lose his credibility.
Exactly.
If he stands
And when you're starting your career as general manager and knowing that these guys typically don't get a second chance, there's no way that Joe Douglas is going to stake his career and bet on Adam Gase when Adam Gase hasn't given you anything tangible to hold on to as a head coach.
Nothing.
Nothing.
Not in 17 games he hasn't.
Yeah, so it just makes sense for them to move off of him.
Yep. All right.
I don't know ESPN when that's going to happen this season, but it's going to happen.
Rightfully so. The Jets fan is very upset, and I don't blame them. Let's get to them and hear what they have to say. Let's go to Val in the Bronx. Val, you're next up on 98.7 ESPN.
Good morning, gentlemen. Good morning, and thank you so much for playing that soundbite from Greeny, because it's about time that people get some real numbers and facts in their face. When Gase's name came up for the hire in the first place, I was like, why are we bringing in a guy who has a losing record and just got fired? You saw it on Sunday. Three and out, and he's standing on the sidelines like he has no idea what's going on. He is so consumed with the problems he's having on offense that he can't even watch any other part of the game, and he's killing our defense. Time of possession, we lose it. Like, you can't have them guys out there for that long and expect them to do anything or be effective. It's a big, big problem, and the only thing that I feel good about with the fact that Johnson came out and said something is that maybe he actually watched all of the game. Maybe he actually listened to a few radio shows on Monday and heard what everybody was saying.
But Val didn't sound like that. It sounded like just the opposite. He thinks that this guy's an offensive guru and he's not going anywhere.
Maybe he's just trying to say that just to try to see if he could salvage whatever he can. Unfortunately, though, I mean, this is one game. And you know what really bothers me about it? Everybody keeps saying, like Schechter said this morning, calm down, it's the first game of the season. This is the only team that you were planning for. There was no preseason. There was no, like, none of that happened this year. So all you had to do was focus on Buffalo. And then you want to tell me that because of COVID and stuff like that, you have to understand, how come Buffalo looked so much more ready for the game than we did? I watched the Giants lose on Monday night, and yeah, they lost. But, you know, watching that game, they did not look, you don't hear anybody calling in and saying the stuff that they're saying about the Jets. About the Giants, because even though they lost that game, they did not look as we looked like we just somebody just dropped us on Earth and said, you know what, tomorrow you're playing a game. That's pathetic for the amount of time that he had to prep for that. The guy.
Well, it's week one, right? I get it. Listen, I get it's week one, right? And you play. I mean, there's 17 weeks. You play 16 games. I get it's week one, but there's something to be said about how it looked, right? And it didn't look good. It looked like your team wasn't prepared. You saw a bunch of the same mistakes you saw last year, and it looked like they quit, like the game was over. And I think that's part of the reason why the owner had to come on and say what he said. Just to reemphasize to the guys inside of that locker room, the coaching staff, that this is my guy. So you may not like him, but
he's going
the owner
nowhere.
Likes him, so that's all that matters.
Yeah, the fact that you feel like you need to do that after the first game of the season, though, that lets everybody know that even you're starting to hear some of the criticisms, and maybe that could be affecting your commitment to Adam Gase as well. Like, to me, like, him coming out and saying that does more harm than good. And it's going to create more controversy, and that's going to bring more questions from the players, from the coaches, the media members. Like, everybody is going to start second-guessing whether or not, you know, Adam Gase is long for the Jets. I mean, it's been our opinion since day one, since they hired him. We didn't think that this was probably going to work out. But in terms of the organization's commitment to him and the players listening to him and the other coaches listening to him. I just, with this comment from Chris Johnson, man, I think it undermines Adam Gase to a degree. And so I look at this season and I said, this is probably going to get a lot more dysfunctional before Chris Johnson is forced to admit that he made the wrong decision when he made this hire a year ago.
Yeah, but unfortunately, I think that's what's going to have to happen. For him to actually make the decision.
How could it get more?
Yeah, the worst thing to happen to the Jets was the second half of last year. That was the worst thing that could have happened.
Because it gave hope.
You know what I'm saying?
It gave hope and confidence, and maybe this guy's not what a lot of people think he is. I think you're right. I think if they would have gone 2-14 and hit rock bottom, maybe you wouldn't be in this situation right now.
And Sam Darnold would be all the better for it. That's the part of this that really bothers me, Dave, because in the middle of this, you're trying to develop your quarterback in his third season, and we know how critical of a year this is for Sam. And he's going to be with a head coach that doesn't seem like he knows what he's doing, and he's going to be a part of all the criticisms that come Adam Gase's way, directly or indirectly. Like, people can say, well, Adam Gase isn't a good coach. He doesn't know what he's doing. He ends up getting fired. But if Sam doesn't show tangible signs of being your franchise quarterback, the organization is probably going to pivot and go in another direction next offseason. And this is a guy that you used a third overall pick on in 2018. So I just that's the part of it that really bothers me, because it feels like the Jets are on this treadmill of mediocrity, and they don't have to be.
At this point, I would take mediocre.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know that they're mediocre.
Yeah, but see, the whole notion this is only week one, I get it. I understand that. But, I mean, you're only going off of what you've seen from, you know, this team and this head coach. And last year, I mean, it was a devastating. I mean, week one last year, you had a 16-point lead. C.J. Mosley leaves, and you end up losing that game. But, I mean, you saw how quickly things can spiral out of control. And that's the last thing I want to have happen again, is that, you know, we get – you know, a month into the season, and the Jets haven't won a game, the team's completely given up, and the Jets remain irrelevant. No one wants to see that. And that'd be the worst thing for your quarterback. I mean, that's, again, because now all of a sudden you're going to be put in a situation where you may have to make a decision. That if you actually, I mean, were a competitive team, you wouldn't have to make. Like, what, can you imagine having
like
to make that decision?
It's more likely than not that we're heading down that road you just described.
Doesn't it feel like that? It does.
No, that's exactly what it feels like. It feels like Sam Darnold's going the way of Ryan Tannehill at this point.
He's going to have to get away from the organization in order to have success?
Yeah, well, the most success he'll have is in a different team.
Yeah, I don't think that's crazy.
Because honestly, what happens, Chris? What happens? Like, can Jacksonville offer you, like, if God forbid the Jets have the worst record in the NFL and get the first overall pick, can Jacksonville offer you enough to not take Trevor Lawrence?
No. No, I don't think it's a franchise-changing draft pick.
Yeah. Now, you're going to put Trevor Lawrence in the same exact situation you put Sam Darnold in, but hopefully he'll have the head coach and general manager be in lockstep when they make that decision.
If they wind up with the number one pick, they're taking Trevor Lawrence. And you'll have a head coach, and that would actually be an attractive job for a minute.
And you're going to sell Sam Darnold for pennies on the dollar.
Correct.
That's what it'll be.
That's correct.
A mid-round draft pick.
Well, you know what? That would be the situation you're forced into.
Yeah, but I understand
how. Yeah, but you didn't have to be forced into that situation. That's the part to me that's so frustrating, and I don't understand why Jets fans aren't infuriated by it. Like, this didn't have to be what it was. If you knew you were going to go the direction of drafting a young quarterback, then why not go get the young, innovative head coach then to help develop the quarterback and to help sell the new foundation for what your team would be, rather than saddle a head coach that's on the hot seat with a rookie quarterback and have competing agendas? Why go down that road? That's not going to end well. It doesn't end well for anybody that makes that decision. So why would you do that if you're Chris Johnson?
I don't understand why people that aren't Jets fans that cover the NFL are surprised that Jets fans are reacting the way that they're reacting after that first week, after what we've seen.
Well, I think that's the only way you can react.
Yeah, no, I know, but I mean, Shefty's saying it's reaction? Only week one. No, I mean, but people are surprised. Like, Shefty's like, hey, Greeny, relax. It's only week one.
Well, it's easy to say. Greeny's lived this for 50 years.
Yeah, but take the 50 years out of it. I get it. I mean, it's been painful, but just the last 17 games has been painful.
Awful.
We keep pointing to the 6-2. The season was over.
Over.
The season was over.
You're beating teams that were awful. You beat the Buffalo Bills, who basically handed you the game. That was not a legitimate 6-2.
No, and more importantly, you lost to
a carryover. Look at this carryover was nothing.
Dave, you lost to an 0-7 Miami Dolphins team and an 0-11 Cincinnati Bengals team.
And you weren't even competitive in that game.
I mean, what are we talking about? And then you show up week one and you don't even, I mean, the game is, I mean, that game was over before it started.
It was over in the first quarter.
So I don't understand how you could be surprised that Jets fans are reacting the way they're reacting.
I think this is the way that you should react, to be honest. I'd be furious. Ron in Queens. Ron, you're next up on 98.7.
gentlemen, I'm listening to you guys talk, and like my head is like just pounding. So I'm a Mets and a Jets fan, and like the similarities are like striking, right? The over arrogance of Brody and Gase, like the way that they sell you really, really high in the beginning of a season to really kind of like, you know, just to fool you just one more time that this is going to be different, and then as soon as the product hits the field, it's absolutely trash as it's always been. And I'm getting even more concerned about Darnold because I'm listening to him talk in his interviews, and he sounds like a battered wife. Like, he sounds like Gase is beating him up so much in the locker room and in the film room that he doesn't really know what to do. And I'm overly tired. It's not just 17 games. It's been all these years in a row. And in all seriousness, I know Rothenberg will call me a fraud. I actually wanted them to score 28 by the end of the first half. I needed it to be as bad as it could have possibly been. So somebody in that office could say, we got to get this dude out of here. I can't take it anymore, man. I just can't take it anymore.
Ron, he's going nowhere, man. I mean, you heard the owner come out yesterday and give him the biggest, you know, vote of confidence, seal of approval you could possibly have.
Yeah, but things change. Come on. I mean, you're talking about a team
that said
we
didn't sign. Why would you say it, Rick?
Well, we didn't sign Odell to trade him. You traded Odell.
And you looked ridiculous.
Exactly right.
And so people still make fun of it. So why would you come
go dragging
week
the Giants
one?
Into this, Rick? No, I see what you're trying to do. Don't drag us into your dysfunction.
Because he's trying to save the season, Dave. He made this decision. This is on him. This was the decision that he made. This was not, you know, him and the GM decided this was the best guy for the job. It was him making this decision, and then he let Gase talk him into firing Mike Maccagnan, which was fine. Not when he did it. I mean, the fact that you let Mike Maccagnan draft your players and then spend all that money makes no sense. But I remember saying it at the time. You're going into year two of Sam Darnold. This could be the most important offseason since you've owned the team. Because everyone felt like Sam Darnold was going to be that guy. And we've seen over the how many years have we seen it now where rookie quarterback that had substantial playing time, take Pat Mahomes out of it because he's in the perfect situation. He's just that. He's generational, right? But how many times have we seen it? Rookie quarterback plays early, second year takes that huge jump. We see it every single year, don't we?
So with Eli.
Yeah,
every
year.
No, but most recently sure. We've seen it every single year. Carson Wentz, Lamar Jackson, Kyler Murray.
Like
you see it every single year.
Yep.
That was the most important offseason since you've owned the team, and you screwed it up. And now you're paying the price for it. Because not one Jets fan wants to hear, we're still in year three of your rookie quarterback, when it's supposed to be the most beneficial time for you as an organization because you're not paying your quarterback any money, that we're still rebuilding in his third year? Come on, man.
Right. And maybe getting worse. And maybe not getting worse than it's ever been.
Not maybe. It's only going to get worse. Because now if you have to fire Adam Gase, now you're talking about third coach, third system for your quarterback going into his fourth year. Now you're the Browns.
But let's face it, you're not that
with
far
less
from
talent.
It.
You're not
that far from it in terms of your organization. In your structure, you're not far from it.
Nope.
And so something has to change. And to me, the first step would be Chris Johnson admitting that he made a mistake with hiring Adam Gase.
I feel like we're at a recognize
that you
right
don't
now.
Know what you're doing. Allow Joe Douglas, the football person, who's your general manager, to do what he does and go through the coaching search and find somebody that can help be a part of getting this thing turned around.
Hi, I'm Rick, and I'm a Jets fan.
Hi, Rick.
McKenzie just explained that straight out of a meeting. The only way to solve this is to admit you actually have a problem first, and then we can actually fix the problem.
No, tell us.
Well, how the hell are you going to fix a problem if you're not willing to admit it's a problem?
Well, the owner yesterday told you it's not a problem. It's going to be fine. No worries. Hang tight.
But him coming out and saying that though, Dave, it's a problem. After week one? I got to ask this question because I don't know. I truly don't know. Have we ever heard an owner after week one come out and give his coach a vote of confidence or an endorsement?
You shouldn't have to.
But that's what I'm saying. Has it ever even happened? I don't know that it's happened. Like, the Jets are making history here.
Yeah,
it's absolutely ridiculous.
Like that's ever happened. They're making the wrong kind of history.
This Wingfoot Golf Course right now is...
What's happening?
Dude, I mean, I'm telling you right now, if me
treacherous.
And Canty, dude, I mean, between the rough...
It's treacherous.
The greens aren't even dry yet in their lightning. Like, me and Canty, this would be... I mean, you may quit golf. If Canty and I were playing this, the way the course is set up now, probably at the turn, me and Canty probably look at each other and go, hey, you know what? I'm all set.
We're all set on this.
Let's go grab a beer. We can be done.
You know who played really well on that course, Rick? Terry Collins. I did not know he was that kind of golfer.
Yeah, he did play well. This is a whole different.
I didn't know he was that kind of golfer. Hell of a golfer.
He's a good dude too. I like talking. That was a nice conversation we had with him.
The further you get away from Terry Collins, the more you appreciate the ability of Terry Collins, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, again, this is another one of those situations where, and I remember this is stuck with me the entire time. They were asking about when Sandy got fired, and numerous people said some of the best things that Sandy Alderson did, you would never know about it because it involves saying no to Jeff.
You think?
Because that's,
I can see that.
But you don't get a chance to see that. You know what I mean?
Then you let people like that run wild, and now you see where we are.
Why?
Well, because owners that like to run wild like that, they usually hire people that are going to allow them to run wild.
Which is why Chris Johnson hired Adam Gase?
Yes.
Well, exactly right. I mean, you think Matt Rhule was. I give Matt Rhule tons of credit. You want to hire me? You want me to leave college, which I'm happy to stay in college. Then I'm going to need to be in charge of my own staff. That's how this is going to work.
And the only thing left is human sacrifice.
Get more time.
That might be
to listen to our show by going to Shell and getting three things done at once. First, fill up with Shell V-Power Nitro Plus. Then save up with Fuel Rewards Program. Finally, snack up to save even more at the pump. Make the most of the stop you need to make with Shell. Let's go to Chris in Wausau. Chris, you're next up on 98.7.
How's it going, DCR? It's my first time catching you guys at the new time slot. My bad.
No.
I apologize for that.
You need to know better, Chris. It's 8:55 to 11 o'clock in the morning. Mark it down.
I've been dropping the ball. That's why I wanted to apologize. We're off the rip.
All right, we got you.
But the whole Adam Gase thing and the Jets, it took me three plays to realize the season was over with the checkdowns and the screens to Chris Hogan. How are you going to run a screen to Chris Hogan when Breshad Perriman's on the other side? That doesn't make sense. The guy says after the game he wouldn't change any of his plays. Genius.
Yeah, I didn't like that.
Going up against the 49ers, you realize you're playing a good defense? Like, what are you saying? He ruined Sam, and I've been saying this for a while, and it stinks, but we cannot go into next year with Sam and a new coach. We have to trade Sam while we can still get something for him. If we go till the draft of the offseason, we're getting a fifth for him.
You can't trade him now, Chris.
But no,
Chris, we got to work on your cardio, Chris.
He's completely out of breath.
Chris, being a Jets fan is miserable. Being a Jets fan is miserable. I can't even think about like what's going to be good because the only thing good for the Jets is to tear it down because you don't retool something that wasn't good in the first place.
But it's torn down. How much more tearing do you want to do?
We have some pieces. We'll keep May, and that's about it. And then we trade the guys like Williamson and Bell for mid-rounders by that deadline. You fire Gase by the fourth week.
What you're talking about doing, man, and you're talking about demo. This isn't Terran. This is demo. I mean, when you draft the quarterback with the third overall pick, you trade what you traded, and it was a good deal that they made. I mean, and it doesn't work out. I mean, you're setting yourself back years. Years. It's a terrible situation. I mean, let's face it. This is a terrible situation.
It's awful. But you can't make it worse. You can't trade Sam Darnold. Even if you do want to take a quarterback, he plays out the year, and then you move in a different direction. Well, trade him now.
But this is what happens, though, Dave. We all want what teams like, you know, Baltimore has, what Pittsburgh has. Like, we all want that, what New England has. We all want that continuity. But when you put, you know, when you have a situation where, you know, you bring in a new GM that didn't draft your quarterback, and he's got a six-year deal, and you know he's on a different schedule than the fan base. You're gonna be put in situations like this. If Joe Douglas had drafted Sam Darnold, and the Jets have a terrible season, and you have a high pick, he's probably not going to draft another. I would imagine he's probably not going to draft another quarterback.
Probably not going to happen.
But no, now that, I mean, that right. There is that temptation though, because Sam Darnold's not his guy.
Not his guy.
And if they bring in a
frustrating
new coach,
part about it. Yeah.
Well, and you know, Chris, if they bring in a new coach, part of what you'd be selling to that coach is, hey, do you like Sam Darnold? Not really. I kind of like Trevor Lawrence. You know what I mean? Like that becomes a conversation.
Right. Then we'll get.
But here's the problem with Sam Darnold, though. You don't know what he is because you've had an incompetent coach the last two seasons. If Adam Gase is allowed to play out 2020, that's the part of it that to me is frustrating, because coming out, you could make an argument that Sam Darnold was the most talented quarterback in that class, and you had the foresight to be able to move up from 6-3 to be in position to draft him.
Which we all thought was a brilliant move.
It was a brilliant move. Yep. I still stand by that, Dave. But then you've gone about systematically putting this kid in a bad spot where you stunt his growth and his development as a quarterback, and now you're going to potentially ruin whatever the kid had to offer at the NFL level. That's the thing that I still can't get past what Chris Johnson did in making that decision, because here's the thing. We don't know if Sam Darnold would have been capable of becoming a good franchise quarterback. We don't know, because you had somebody that you had a question mark about at the head coaching spot.
What he needed too, Dave, what he needed, and I think we all realized this at the time too, as talented as he was, has not played quarterback for that long.
No.
Like,
no,
tons
he's
of talent, but
he the position. He is. You're
needed,
right.
He needed continuity. Like, he needed stability.
Let's bring him in. Question time. Andy from Merrick. Good morning, Andy. How are you?
Good morning, DCR. With the return of Big Ten sports, I have a 4-pack of Big Ten basketball questions for you.
Oh, great.
Starting with, which Big Ten school has the most championships in the conference with 24?
Big Ten basketball championships?
That's probably, it's Purdue, maybe? Purdue or Michigan, you'd have to think.
This is more, I mean, this is, Big Ten basketball has got to be more you than us.
How'd you be going Big Ten basketball?
You had it. Come on, spit it out.
Is it Purdue?
It's Purdue.
All right.
Nice.
Nice, Dave.
All right. 1984, they instituted the Big Ten Player of the Year. Since then, there have been two guys who have won back-to-back Big Ten Player of the Year title. Name either of them.
84. Back-to-back I think Steve Alford could have won it. Have someone won it? Frank Kaminsky? Denzel Valentine?
Not there yet. Come on.
We're not there. Jim Jackson.
Jim Jackson is one, Ohio State.
Nice, David.
Nice, Dave.
And is Mateen Cleaves the other?
Cleaves of Michigan State. Nicely done.
Okay.
Nicely done, Dave.
He is the only Big Ten men's basketball player to surpass 1,000 points in a single season. Who is he?
Wow.
1,000 points in a single season.
Is it Glenn Rice?
Oh, close, not there.
Come on, David.
I thought you had that.
I'm supposed to be spitballing.
Glenn Robinson.
CeCe, my man.
There we go.
The big dog.
Big dog, yeah.
And finally, Big Ten Coach of the Year has been won by Bobby Knight 5 times, which ranks him number 2. Who is the Big Ten Coach of the Year 7 times over?
7 times. I wonder if Gene Katie could be the guy?
Don't wonder. You got it.
Yeah, there we go.
Wow, Dave. That is unbelievable.
What was the hair? The hair was the giveaway there.
Guys, 4-for-4. Stay healthy as always, and let's go, Islanders.
Not your best day. I'm going to be honest. We did good, but that was not your best day, Andy.
Yeah, Big Ten basketball.
Yes, wouldn't you have figured that it would have been Big Ten football would have been the
That's what I would have thought.
Right? Yeah, not to mention the fact that Chris played football. I mean,
the fact that we get Big Ten football back yesterday and he calls with Big Ten basketball questions?
That's random.
Yeah, it's lazy. It's lazy.
Yeah. Well, it's an Islanders fan for you.
I don't know if that's lazy. I think he's overthinking himself. You know, he's outthinking himself.
Yeah, too much thought.
Kind of like what Adam Gase does on the sidelines.
Yankees with a thrashing of the Blue Jays again last night. They are now well into second place in that American League East. And, Chris, you know, the Yankees were awful.
Feels so good when you say that, Dave.
Well, I mean, I'm being honest. I mean, they beat up on the Blue Jays. They're in second place. You can see the 4 spot overall. I mean, the Yankees, and this is what you want to do. You want to be playing good baseball down the stretch, getting healthier down the stretch. It feels like it's falling into place for this team right now.
No, it does, Dave. What a difference a week makes. And can I tell you how much I love watching Yankees games where there isn't any suspense, no drama, and we're just drubbing the other team? I mean, in the last 2 games, the Yankees scored the same amount that the Jets and Giants combined scored in their games this past weekend. It's crazy to think that. But, I mean, this team is on fire, man. I mean, 7 home runs last night, 6 the night before. We got Higgy with it. The home run stroker with 3 bombs yesterday. I mean, listen, the team looked good. Garrett Cole was dealing last night. I went back and watched it again this morning, and for the life of me, I can't understand why he decided to throw a changeup as a first pitch to VR in that sixth inning, because I was like everybody else rooting for the no-hitter, but I wouldn't dare say it. But, yeah, everything looked good last night. The only negative to last night was Aaron Judge didn't get a hit, but guess what? He didn't get hurt. So I'll take that as a win. Stanton back in the lineup today. So, I mean, listen, it seems like it's all coming together at the right time.
You've gotten good. I mean, you've gotten good starting pitching consistently. And now, I mean, with DJ LeMahieu, I mean, I can't say enough about this guy.
He's unbelievable.
Again, do it again last night. I mean, Voit's been great. And now you're starting to get healthy. You're starting to get whole. And, I mean, that really, for me, was the only concern as we got, you know, down the stretch. Would you be healthy in enough time to make sure everyone was playing, you know, their best baseball headed into the postseason?
You know, it feels like we're there, doesn't it? I mean, it feels
we're getting close.
Playing. Yeah. I mean, Glaber's got to get healthy because clearly he's not. Sounds like Paxton is now done for the season.
He's done. We said that yesterday. Yeah, he's done.
Yeah. So he's done for the season. So you're going to have to figure out who your third starter is going to be. And you want your bullpen to be good. You want to get healthier. But and they're making the right move with Frazier also. Like he is.
He's
terrific.
Been great.
He's got
to
be.
He deserves to play.
He absolutely
he's earned the right to continue to play. He has. I mean, that's the only way you can look at it, right? His defense has gotten a lot better. And I mean, as far as what he brings to you at the plate, I mean, the guy's really good, man. The guy can hit.
He has good at bats too. He's having good at bats too. And I mean, that solves the issue. I mean,
doesn't he have an OPS over 1,000?
Then that answers the question of who's playing left field now.
Yep.
So he'll play left. You'll have Hicks in center. And
now the question has to be who's going to be your catcher.
I think it's clear.
I mean, think Cohen's Sanchez and Higashioka will both catch games in the postseason. I mean, Higashioka seems like he's the personal catcher for Garrett Cole. So I mean, whatever it takes to have Garrett Cole at his best. That's probably what you need to do once you get into the second season.
Yeah, when the lineup is healthy, I mean, look at how deep this lineup is. I mean, you can have if Garrett Cole, and what Higashioka did last. I mean, he's not going to. That's
of
I mean,
course
that's a rare.
That's the outlier. Yes.
Yeah, he's not great offensively, but I mean, that's fine. Like Chris, I mean, to Chris's point, if Garrett Cole is at his best and your lineup is healthy, you can afford to have a catcher in there for his defense as opposed to his offense.
Yes.
You shouldn't need the offense.
You have what, 11 games left, right?
The Yankees are 28-21, yes.
Right. So I think they have 11 games left. They first of all, they need to finish second in this division, which it looks like there's a good chance that they're going to. Because the last thing you want to do is fall behind Toronto, wind up in the seventh spot, and play Tampa on the road for a best of three. So I don't know that, you know, four or five matters all that much, although you'd probably like to be home. But you want to avoid Tampa or the White Sox.
You're 20-7 at home. But you're 20-7 at home. I mean, they clearly like being at home.
Of course they like being at home. You'd like to be at home.
No, and they don't have much. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. They haven't had a lot of success in Tampa.
No, you can't go to Tampa. That's the you cannot go to Tampa for the best of three. Because they match you every step of the way. And I think Tampa, you could argue, is a better team than the Yankees right now.
Yeah, listen, Tampa with that pitching staff and a three-game set, I'm all set. I mean, you're going to have to beat them at some point, but give me neutral site in a 5 or 7 game series.
But if you wind up with the 4 or 5 and Tampa's the 2, now you don't face them to the American League Championship Series. That's what you want. You don't want to face them in the first round or the second round. You want to avoid them at all costs.
I would just say avoid them in a 3 game series. You're going to have to beat them at some point, I would imagine.
Sure, but I don't want to have to beat them and then the White Sox. Like give me the easiest road, and in my mind the easiest road is start at home against Minnesota, which means you have to catch them. You're a game behind them in the loss column. Catch them, get the 4, have them at home for the best of 3. We know what you do to Minnesota, and then you'd move on to take on the White Sox, and then if you win that, you'd move on to take on potentially the Rays.
Now Minnesota's a good team. I'm not saying
they're not good.
Yankees have had success, but no, you're right. I mean, the 3-game series, you would rather be at home against Minnesota. Even on the road against Minnesota is better than having to go on the road and play Tampa.
No, you don't want Tampa. The two best teams right now that I would want to avoid if I was the Yankees are Tampa and the Dodgers. Now, I'm not saying you can't avoid them, but if you gave me my choice, those are the two teams I don't want any part of right now.
Hey, you're talking about, I mean, the Dodgers are probably the best team in baseball. Right.
I don't even think probably.
Okay.
I mean, look at what they've done. They're clearly does Kershaw in the postseason, all those question marks certainly remain. Dave Roberts in the big spot, but right now, clearly the best team in baseball.
Yeah, clearly now. But I still stand by what we saw early in the season with the Yankees when they were 16-6. When this team, and you're seeing it, now you're starting to get a glimpse of what this team, you're getting reminded of what this team,
yes,
the potential this team is.
They were great, they were awful, and they're back to being great again.
Yeah, but I mean, again, the reason we reacted the way we reacted to the 5-15 is because of what you saw last year, which is an anomaly. The Yankees should not have won 103 games last year with the amount of injuries that they dealt with. It shouldn't have happened.
Right, but then you had the same thing. You had Judge, you had Stanton, you had Torres, you name them, you had them hurt.
Yeah, but I mean, again, you reacted. When you look, I mean, really, when you sat back and looked at what they were throwing out there, you were like, come on. I mean, they were what they were. Should it have been 5-15? Probably not. But you weren't getting great starting pitching. The bullpen was struggling. You know, guys that you were counting on that were going to actually be in your lineup weren't hitting well. So, right. I mean, there was a ton of different things that go
into it. But the reason I think they freaked out, too, is it got tenuous. Like, you were a game or two away from being on the outside looking in of a season where if you didn't make the playoffs, it would be a tremendous failure. So, right, you had 20 games left, and you were a game out of being out of the playoff format. So Yankees fans, understandably so, got very nervous.
Yeah, but that was Yankees fans. That wasn't, I mean, me and you, we're Mets fans.
We weren't panicked. To me, it's listening to the Yankee fan freak out about, oh my God, what's going to happen? It's laughable. But that's the way they react. Canty reacted when they were 9-9 a couple years ago that he was on the verge of breaking glass.
He was full
really,
panic.
Really, Dave, you got to keep bringing that up? I don't understand why you got to keep visiting in the past, man. Let it go. It's over.
Everything was better in the past. We could go back. Yeah,
the present is the disaster.
Is the problem.
Yeah. This is some kind of year.
Not for my Yankees, though. Right now, the president is looking pretty good. I'll tell you.
Yeah, how could you not feel good? I mean, the two questions are, who's going to be your catcher in the probably split time? And who's going to be your third starter? And who's going to be your fourth starter? Yeah. If you move on to a series where you need that many starters.
Can I ask Rico a question? Rico, let me ask you this. Is it too early to start talking about Luke Poit as AL MVP?
I think he's in the conversation.
Abreu's going to win it, though.
Yeah, I think Abreu's probably in. I mean, then also Nelson Cruz. I mean, Voit's carried them. He's been great. And I give him tons of credit because you can clearly tell, I mean, even trotting around the bases, that his foot is not right. Like, he's gutting this thing out. And why wouldn't you? I mean, when you're swinging the bat the way he's swinging the bat?
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't want to miss a game.
None.
Well, he's on pace for what? Like 57 home runs?
Yeah, well, he's got 19 home runs.
So maybe more.
Let's see how many games he's played. This season, he has played 45 games. He's got 168 at-bats. He's got 19 home runs.
So he's on pace for 60 home runs.
45 RBIs.
He's on base for 60 and 130.
That's another one of those unbelievable Cashman moves, man.
Oh, got it for nothing.
And how good? I don't care. Listen, the nerds that do the defensive metrics and everything else, miss me with that. Gio Urshela defensively at third base is ridiculous.
Do you know that he's not considered an elite defensive third baseman, though?
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
That's what I'm saying.
Isn't it?
Makes no sense to me. The dude, I mean, if I see him make one more play going to his backhand, almost halfway into the dugout and throwing someone out at first base. It's like every single game he makes a play like that. Just nonchalant, no big deal.
He's great.
Short left field, I'll track it down. I mean, it's... And I got Todd. Did I need to have Todd Frazier in the lineup? Honestly. Is he necessary to have in the lineup? Dave?
No, I don't know what you want me to say.
Why is
you
Jeff McNeil batting seventh? May I ask that? You're going up against the righty.
I don't know, but I mean, aren't we past this already? We know that this is a defeated season. We know.
No, because they kept me alive. That J.D. Davis kept me alive. Kept the hope alive last night.
Come on, they're five games under 500. Look at their remaining schedule. You really think the Mets are going to compete for a playoff spot now? That's a
Listen, I'm not saying really. I'm not going to be realistic with this thing, but had they lost that game with the Grom going out with the hamstring spasm or whatever else it was, that was it. They lose that game. That was it.
So but that was the nail in the coffin if they lost.
You know what
that
you're
game.
Like? You're like visiting the 104-year-old person in the hospital, and the doctor comes out and says, "I think this is it." And then he comes out and he goes, no, you know what? It's not. He could have another day or two. It's going to end poorly and soon for the Mets.
No, I would equate my fandom of the Mets. I'm like Will Ferrell in Austin Powers. I'm not dead. I'm just severely hurt. I think it's just broken. And they try to shoot him, and oh, I'm still alive. I'm like the Black Knight. It's only a flesh wound.
Well,
I got no leg.
You're
that would have been that for me. Listen, you know how much I love the Mets. If they lost last night, that was. And again, I'm not going to sit here and pretend like they're going to make the playoffs. But that was, I mean, as far as people paying attention to the Mets, they lost last night.
You know how I can't watch? Honestly, I cannot watch this guy. It pains me at this point. Pains me. Any guess?
I mean, there's so many. I mean, there's multiple.
Well, take a
crack at it. Is he a position player or is he a pitcher?
He's a position player.
Wilson Ramos.
Yes. Ramos.
I can't stand him. I almost want to fight him. I can't stand watching him play.
He was so good last year, too.
The hate is real, Dave.
It drives me. Because every play at the plate, you know that they're not. It's not going to work. Like, he's either going to be on the wrong side of the plate, or he's going to miss the ball or something.
I mean, doesn't even think about throwing a runner out at second.
Anybody out. He never gets down the baseline. Like, when he comes in with a runner on, it's like it's going to be a hit or it's going to be a double play. Like, nothing. I don't know. He frustrates me to absolutely no end. He drives me crazy.
He's had a bad season. He struggled.
Terrible season.
Yeah, I mean, last year, with runners in scoring position last year, he was great.
He was good last year.
Yeah, this year, not so much. But that's what frustrates you, man. I mean, when you start thinking about, I mean, the seasons that you got last year from Alonso, McNeil, DeGrom, Ramos had a good season. And you were, I mean, and you were that bad? I mean, there's something going on, man. That's a huge problem. You should have enough talent to win.
They're a poorly constructed team. And tell me you didn't have, because he went out last night and the first thought was, DeGrom's hurt, we don't exactly know what it is. And my thought was, oh my God. I said to my kids, I said, even if he's out for the rest of this year, fine. Don't let this be some kind of a huge injury that's going to take into next year. Now, fortunately, it's nothing, and it sounds like he could even make his next start on Monday, potentially. But my first thought, wasn't it yours, Rick, was, oh, God, this is going to be really bad?
No, my first thought wasn't it's going to be really bad. I mean, my first thought was, if this was, I mean, the way he looked over to the dugout, it felt like something that he might have been dealing with headed into the start. My first thought was, why would you even let him start that game then?
Yeah. And they knew about it, too. You find
like you're
out
not
afterwards.
Gonna make, yeah, that's what I mean. Like, you're not going to make the, again, the chances of them making the playoffs, it's a long shot, right?
They probably have to go 8-3 at a minimum to get in.
But his chances of winning the Cy Young now might have gone right out the window.
Yeah, that's the
that
thing.
Second inning ruined his Cy Young chances last night. Yeah. You're right.
So why not do him a solid? Like, hey, you know what? Hey, I'm dealing with this hamstring. Then fine. Okay, no. I don't need to see you go tear your hamstring. Like, you can be, let's give it a day or two.
Right.
So you go out there and struggle the way that you struggle.
If you're feeling better on Friday, you make the start then. If you're not, we'll push you back to past the weekend. And if you can't start the rest of the year, you can't start the rest of the year. But you're right. The Mets for me have basically come down to, you know, watching them play, not reacting crazily when they lose, which is more often than not, and hoping that this guy wins the Cy Young again this year. And that's probably out the window with that second inning last night.
Yeah. No, it's out. Unless
Bauer gets hammered and Darvish gets hammered
and
finishes on, like, you know, 14 innings of scoreless baseball down the stretch.
Yeah, exactly right. But no, that was my first thought, was why even let him go out there?
Yeah.
Like, what are we trying to prove here? And my other thought was, why the hell, I mean, why is Pete Alonso? I get he's struggling, but he's one of the, I mean, he's the guy just keeping the lineup. I don't need
you
to
let
see.
Him figure it out.
Yeah, they play this game all the time.
Yeah, but the Yankees, I mean, the Yankees keep they keep rolling Gary Sanchez out there every single day. Every day. And tell us how great he's going to be. And yet the Mets, the guy who had 53 bombs, had the most. I mean, dude, when you talk about magical season, like if you were to write how you would like your rookie season to go, I don't think you could have scripted it better.
No, he was great.
Then you're going to take him out of the lineup, and I got to see Todd Frazier in the lineup. Come on, man. I don't need to see Todd Frazier in my lineup. I don't.
No, it's
and why is Jeff McNeil batting seventh?
Uh-oh.
Why? He's batting 331. He's your best hitter. I got him batting seventh against a righty.
And I got to watch Wheeler go out there and deal every fifth day now.
Quality start after quality start.
Every you didn't think about keeping him?
And then I got to watch this team run the bases?
Oh, that's
what are we doing? I mean,
namaste.
Stevie Cohen's got to blow. This thing has to be from top to bottom. It has to be.
You know what would be great?
I love how you try to convince yourself you're not going to get worked up, Rick, and then you proceed to get worked up.
I'm in a good mental
I don't feel like I'm asking much, though. I don't feel like I'm asking much.
But it's the same thing. I mean, whose fault is it? They do the same thing over and over, and you continue to get upset. That's your fault.
Yeah, but you're like, listen, you're a professional baseball player. You should know how to run the bases.
They do this all the time, Rick.
Should know how to play baseball. Like, I mean, just the fundamentals of baseball. Just, I mean, completely, just rip it up. Tear them up. Throw them out the window. We're not interested. Jeff McNeil is batting 331, Dave, and he's batting seventh. For what? Tell me why he's batting behind Todd Frazier. Why?
I don't know. I don't know why Frazier's in the lineup.
Thank you. Why?
I don't know why they reacquired Todd Frazier. It's Brody's guy. It's Brody's guy.
Can't take it.
All right, today on ESPN Daily, 50 years ago, USC played in Alabama and paved the way for racially mixed teams in Southern college football. Players who were there share the game's real legacy. That's ESPN Daily. Subscribe now wherever you get podcasts. We've waited and waited, and it was a very rushed CMT on Tuesday. But here we are on Thursday, week two of the NFL season, ready to roll with a little CMT.
All right, here we go, fellas.
Here we go.
Dave, I'll have you start us off because you drive the show.
Okay.
And you're handsome. Oh. I can't say handsome, too, but I just felt like I want to make you feel good before we get into this. So I want to go back to week one. We did a quick CMT on Tuesday. I want to know from you guys, what was the most important week one win? Was it the Patriots, the Bears, or the Pittsburgh Steelers?
Okay. Patriots, Bears, or Steelers? All right. For me, it's the Bears would be the marry.
If it was socially acceptable, I wouldn't marry them.
Because this is a team that it feels like they're teetering. And it feels like they have almost no confidence in the quarterback. So to get that win was tremendous for Chicago. That's my marry. My cuddle is Pittsburgh, and I'll tell you why.
Bombs and
we haven't seen the quarterback in a long time. There were a lot of concerns. What would he be? Didn't play well early on. Got better as the game went on. I think it's very important to kind of reestablish what he's capable of doing. So I will cuddle into Pittsburgh, and I'm going to trash New England. I know they're going to be fine.
I
have no doubt. There's very little I have more confidence in this year in the NFL than that New England will be fine, and no surprise, they were.
All right. I guess one trash is another man's treasure. In this instance, the one that Dave married, the Bears, I'm going to trash them.
Bombs.
I just am. I saw the performance by Trubisky in the fourth quarter, and even though it was a great game for him, I think long-term he's still not the answer for the Bears at the quarterback position, so I'm going to trash that because I don't think the Bears are going anywhere fast. I am going to marry the Steelers win over the Giants for all of the reasons that Dave spelled out. It's been a long time since Ben Roethlisberger has played quarterback for them, and he had a good performance, 3 touchdowns, no turnovers. I think that's a good start for him, and they can try to build off of that. I'm going to cuddle up to the Pats win, and here's why. We had 20 years of Bill Belichick and Tom Brady. Breaking in a new quarterback, I thought it was important that marriage got off to a great start, and so I think that was a good win over a division opponent at home. Cuddle.
All right, here we go. Canty, you're up. Most surprising win of week one. Were you most surprised that Arizona won, that Jacksonville won, or that the Washington football team won?
I was most surprised at Jacksonville. I just thought Jacksonville had punted on the season, and they were trying to get the number one overall pick. All of the moves they made this offseason look like they're planning for the future, not 2020. So for them to beat a team that a lot of people thought could win the AFC South, that was a brow raiser. So I'll marry that one.
If it was so, I'm going to cuddle. I would marry them.
Yeah, there you go. I'm going to cuddle the Washington football team's win over the Eagles. I mean, the Eagles, again, we thought the NFC East was a two-team race between them and the Dallas Cowboys. And the fact that they had a 17-point lead on the road and they blew that to Washington? Yeah, that was a surprise. So I'll cuddle that one.
Bombs
and then I'll trash the Arizona one. Not to say that it wasn't a surprise, but of those three that you gave us, that was probably the one that we all felt like there could be a chance. I know I took that one as my best bet. I didn't think they would win the game outright, but I thought they would keep it, you know, closer than 3 points, and Turns out they ended up winning the game.
Firmly. Look at this garbage! Look at this garbage!
All right, I don't differ at all. I'm going to agree across the board. Jacksonville, we've sat here and discussed how awful they are and that they're going to be a one-win team or a two-win team, and they're in it for Trevor Lawrence, and they're going to wind up with him as their new quarterback. Well, Gardner Minshew and company have a different view. They move on from Leonard Fournette. They win a game against Indianapolis. I'll marry Jacksonville. I will cuddle Washington, and I will trash Arizona. Again, not that Arizona was bad. Although they were terrific. It's a great win. But we expect them to be a pretty good football team, so it wasn't all that surprising.
All right, here we go. David, most impressive NFL debut. Chase Young, who had a sack and a half, and they were dominant. I mean, that defensive line had 8 sacks. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, 25 for 138 in a touchdown, or Joe Burrow?
All right. Most impressive debut. See, the expectations were huge with Edwards-Helaire. So, yes, he was terrific. He didn't get in from the goal line a couple times, which would have been nice if he would have plunged in from there. So
You know what that's like.
Yeah, I do. I'm not going to I'm not going to include him there. I'm going to move him down the list. I thought Joe Burrow was great. The offensive line was so bad, and he still had his team 4 yards away from winning that game, and they should have won it. I mean, for A.J. Green to push off and then to miss the field goal. I'm going to marry Joe Burrow. I think he's going to be sensational.
I would marry them.
I will cuddle Chase Young,
who is
going to be terrific and was terrific in week one. And solely because the expectations are so high and he goes to I think the best offense in the NFL. That's kind of what I expect from Clyde Edwards-Helaire. So I'm going to trash that. He's terrific. He will be. But I'm going to trash it.
All right. I am going to marry Chase Young and his performance and his debut against the Eagles. I mean, that defensive line dominated the Eagles' offensive line. And I know the Eagles' O-line was a little bit shorthanded, but it doesn't matter. I mean, those guys went out there, and they got 13 hits on the quarterback. And Chase Young was a big part of disrupting everything, messing up all of the plays. So I'm going to marry that debut. I'm going to cuddle the Edwards-Helaire debut.
Bombs and
even though he's clearly on the best team of the three, I just think in terms of his performance and seeing how Andy Reid plans on using him, you could be talking about somebody that could lead the league in yards from scrimmage. That's how impressive his debut was. So I'm going to cuddle right up next to that, and I'm going to trash Joey B's debut because guess what? He didn't win. Not his fault.
Garbage.
Put it on the kicker, but he didn't win. So that's why I can't include him with the other two.
It was my kicking calf. No, it was my plant calf. I don't know which calf it was.
By the way, did you see he's fine, miraculously?
Yeah.
He's totally fine and will be kicking this weekend.
Yeah, but he screwed up. He made it up, so he said the wrong calf. Which one was it? Initially, it was the one calf, and then after the game, it was the other calf.
Right. I give him credit, though. Like, that was an immediate something is horribly wrong.
Yeah, he had an injury happen. He had a bruised ego. That's what happened.
Immediate had that reaction.
The second that ball hit his foot, he knew he missed it.
Yeah, the second.
Oh, all right, here we go.
My arm.
No, it's broken. Christopher, let's head into week two here. We got week two. It starts tonight. The gotta-have-it game. I'm not saying must win because it's only week two, but you got to have a win this week. I'm going to give you Cleveland at home versus Cincinnati, Tampa at home versus Carolina, or Dallas at home versus Atlanta. Gotta have it.
Gotta have it. Okay, I'm going to start with marrying the Cleveland Browns.
If it was socially,
I mean, the expectations were that they would compete for a playoff spot. If they don't win this game against the Bengals, I mean, you could be talking about them blowing the whole thing up in Cleveland in terms of the Baker Mayfield experiment. So I'm going to say that is the one that you got to marry, especially when you consider the competition too, right? It's the Cincinnati Bengals. They had the first overall pick a year ago, and they've got a rookie quarterback. Like, you should be able to take care of your business. The one that I am going to cuddle up to is Dallas. And I'm going to cuddle up to Dallas just from the standpoint of new head coach, same questions. When is this team going to play up to their potential? We just haven't seen it yet. They seem like they have an all-star roster, nothing but Pro Bowlers up and down the line. But yet somehow, some way, they can't find a way to consistently put it all together. So I'm going to say that's a gotta have it kind of game. And I'm going to trash Tampa just from the standpoint of Tom Brady is a veteran, man. I mean, he's the greatest quarterback of all time. They've got time to figure it out. And you knew learning a new system, learning new personnel, this was going to be a bit of a learning curve. So if they lose this game, I don't necessarily look at it as the end of the season for them.
firmly. Look at this garbage. Look at this garbage.
All right, I was going to agree with you, Chris, because I loved your analysis of Cleveland, and it's a huge game, and you have to win it. But here's the difference. I don't think anybody really expects Cleveland to do a lot this year. Yeah, maybe they'll get to 500, but very few expect them to be a postseason team. So what seemed to me like, and I love the analysis, what seemed to me like when you were saying, I was like, yeah, I'm going to go Cleveland also. I was like, wait a minute. I'm not. Because the expectation with Cleveland is not the same as it is with these other two teams. So I'm going to marry Dallas. Dallas better win this game.
I would marry them.
All right, they should have won game one. Now they're home. They're playing Atlanta. The expectation, and everyone has said it, is they at a minimum better go to the NFC Championship game. If they don't win this game, that would be a horrendous start for this football team. So Dallas is my marry. Tampa, the same. Tampa, the expectation was they're going to, you know, maybe go to the Super Bowl and be the first team to play in their home stadium. They need to win this game desperately. And against, I think they were Carolina this week.
Carolina.
You're Tampa. You have to win and wind up 1-1. So I will cuddle Tampa.
Bombs and
hilarious. And I agree that it would be an embarrassment if Cleveland doesn't win. But again, long term, they're still Cleveland. So I will trash the Browns.
Firmly. Look at this garbage. Look at this garbage.
All right, we got time for one more. I got one last one. You guys got time for it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, here we go. Let's overreact a little bit after what we saw in week one. I think AFC is pretty self-explanatory. We all agree it's Kansas City, Baltimore, and then what do you think? Who do you think the third best team in the AFC is right now?
I think Tennessee.
Tennessee?
Yeah.
Okay, I think that, I mean, you say the AFC is loaded. I would disagree. I think the NFC is more loaded. So let's go overreact in the NFC. After what you saw in week one, headed into week two, the best team in the NFC is Seattle, Green Bay, or New Orleans?
All right. I'm going to say New Orleans. I marry them.
If it was socially acceptable, I would marry them.
I do not love the quarterback. I think he has real flaws at this point of his career. But despite that, they're still so talented. Their defense is good. I mean, they have an elite running back. They have an elite receiver. He might miss time, and I don't think there's a... I mean, Sanders will step in. Taysom Hill finds a way. They're well coached. There's not a lot of deficiencies with New Orleans. So after 1 week, I will stand by it. New Orleans is the best team. And now I struggle. You know, he never gets the credit that he deserves. He's never even gotten an MVP vote. I'm going to say Seattle will be my cuddle here. They're terrific.
Bombs
they really are.
And,
you know, they always find a way. They always are in the postseason. He's always an upper echelon quarterback. So I will cuddle Seattle. And I like Green Bay. I love what Rodgers did. I think that they're a playoff caliber team, but as far as best team in the NFC, I'm not there yet. I will trash the Packers.
Firmly. This garbage. Look at this garbage.
All right, I am going to marry Seattle.
If it was socially acceptable, I would marry them.
I am, man. I'm all in on this team. I picked them to win the division before the season even started. I think the move to get Jamal Adams is only going to make that team that much better. Defensively now, they have a playmaker beside Bobby Wagner. So I really like what Seattle is doing and going on the road and getting that win against a desperate Falcons team. And I say desperate because of the coach's situation. I like Seattle. I think they are that team in the NFC. I'm going to cuddle Green Bay.
Bombs
and here's why.
I
thought Green Bay would take a step back, seeing what they did this offseason, adding Jordan Love and not really getting Aaron Rodgers a true playmaker with their early draft capital. I just thought that this team would regress. That 13-3 that they had last year didn't feel like it was a real 13-3. But, I mean, the way that they dismantled the Minnesota Vikings, a team that people were saying was a dark horse candidate to go to the Super Bowl out of the NFC, that was impressive. So I'm going to cuddle up to them, and I'm going to trash New Orleans. And the main reason I'm doing that is because I don't believe in the quarterback, and he didn't show me anything on Sunday to make me feel otherwise.
All right, there you go, boys. That is a Thursday edition of Cuddle, Marry, Trash.
Beautiful, wonderful edition of CMT, an extended version. Like we just kind of touched the tip of the iceberg on Tuesday, and today we were stretched out. We gave it the full performance. All right, the Islanders are in the Stanley Cup Conference Finals, and MSG Plus has complete live coverage before every game. Tonight, 7:30, after every game as well. 7:30, get ready for Game 6 against the Lightning. With the team that's been with you all season long as Shannon, Butch, and AJ preview the matchup on Islanders game night. Then immediately after Game 6, tune back to MSG Plus for complete coverage, including in-depth analysis and player interviews. You got to be beside yourself for this Game 6 tonight. I mean, you have another full night of sports. right? You get the Islanders, game six, a game you can hear right here on 98.7 ESPN at 7:30. You have full night of baseball, and you have football as well. And for you, you got golf.
Yeah, I got golf too. And yeah, I mean, you got golf, hockey, football, basketball, baseball. I mean, you name it. You got everything.
You name it, we got it. Now streaming Disney's new movie, Mulan. Experience the legend of Mulan as she fights to defend her family and the kingdom. Available to Disney Plus subscribers who unlock premier access. Also, we want to remind you, you can listen to us anywhere you go. Just click Listen Live at ESPNNewYork.com. Find 98.7 ESPN on the ESPN app or the TuneIn app, or simply tell your smart speaker, play 98.7 ESPN at 98.7 ESPN New York. We go where you go. Game 6. 7:30 right here on 98.7 Islanders and Lightning. Is this it, Rick? Or do we see a Game 7 this weekend?
I want to believe we're going to see a Game 7. I have to know whether or not Braden Point is playing tonight.
Is that a game-time decision? I would imagine he is.
I figure, I mean, you take a 3-1 lead. He's dealing with an injury. You want to manage the injury. If you can win without him in Game 5, great. You don't want to go to a Game 7. It's the last thing you want to do is go to a Game 7.
If I offered you right now, overtime, would you take it?
I would take it.
You would take it.
I mean, that's how close these games are.
Yeah.
I mean, that's when you play the way the Islanders play, you give yourself a chance to win. It's going to be a close game. I mean, especially going up against the goalie you're going up against. So you got to continue to do the same things. Limit the mistakes. If you get opportunities on the power play, at least generate momentum on the power play. They happen to score a power play goal in the last game. Get traffic, pucks to the net. Be smart, your blue lines. And that's all you can do. That's all I ask is give yourself a chance to win this game.
This is a huge game tonight at 7:30. All right, do either of you guys want Cleveland or Cincinnati for our picks tonight?
No, I'm set.
I'm not taking it either.
Yeah. I'm not either. I usually like Thursday. By the way, Dave, I got some news for you with your goalie, Henrik Lundqvist, if you're interested.
Okay, go ahead. This was
Libor Hájek doing a Czech interview. He said it was very sad. After the last match with Carolina, he said goodbye, saying it was his last match. It means game. He said he didn't know what would happen to him if the Rangers bought him out or went somewhere else. It was hard for him. He's a great fighter, the best hockey player in terms of approach, training, and humanity that I ever met. I even bought the same jeans he had to look like him.
I think, you know, hearing it kind of hammers home the point, but I think we all knew that, right? That it was the end for Hank here with the Rangers.
Yeah, I mean, I think we all realize it's just it's tough because he's been so good for you guys.
He's been great. I mean, he's a Hall of Famer, no doubt.
DCR is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Kicks them weekday mornings at 9 on 98.7 ESPN.